Hey everyone, you're listening to another episode of Big Shiny Takes. I'm one of your hosts, Eric Wickham, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend Marino Greco. Marino, hello.
Howdy, good listeners, and Eric.
It's so nice that you included me in that. Jeremy's not going to join us today. Jeremy is in a little thing people in the business like to refer to as book writing hell. It's stuff related to him writing a book. But we're also joined today, it's a very special guest, a old J school buddy, a local Toronto reporter, and dare I say it, a friend of the Big Shiny Takes Institute, Hunter Crowther. Hunter, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. How's it going, guys? How are you doing this evening?
It's been a quick 8 years, hasn't it?
You know, time is just like, it's more a theory. We're just here in the now, you know? 8 years, 8 minutes, you know? My voice hasn't changed. It's all good. Okay. We're all good, guys.
Everything's fine. Everything in media is fine. Everything in the city is fine. Everything's fine. We say this a lot on the show, right, Marino?
Oh, yeah. No, we're definitely in a better position with the journalism industry. Things were going great before, and now that's an Italian chef's kiss. It's just not the worst it's ever been.
You know, you said it's been 8 years since we saw each other. I'm more confident now in the industry that we're in. Because you know that phrase, more with less. And I just think that, you know, we're on a good path, you know? We're doing great. I'm having a great, 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 great time.
Well, I gotta say, like, for me personally, this is the best media has been. But for the rest of the country and everybody else involved, I feel like there hasn't been a week this year where there wasn't massive layoffs and stuff. And then I'm like, I'm seeing this, and I just quit my job. I'm going to be a full-time media idiot going forward.
Yeah, but you know, I think you're going about it in the right way. Like, obviously, we're alluding to the news of the past week. Meta pulling news from Facebook, Google doing the same today, sort of somewhere in between there, 1,300 Bell layoffs. What else happened? There's one more thing. Like, there's so many things. Oh, yeah, Post Media attempting to buy the Toronto Star, talks going around about that. Yeah, but you're going about it in the new independent contributor way, contributing to independent sort of nonprofit, sort of fledgling nonprofit outlets and stuff that is just showing the true value of journalism, if that makes sense. I don't know. I think this is...
You sound so confident when you say that, man.
Yeah. Journalism? No, like, that's the correct tone to take when you say the word journalism, though, right? Like, Hunter, you actually, like, alluded to the fact that in 2016, like, when we graduated, I think you were in the three-year program.
Yeah, at Harbor College, yeah. I was in the three-year diploma program from 2014 and graduated in 2017.
Okay, yeah, so we were out of there in 2016, and we just kind of, like, walked into this world that was very much in the middle of a transition, right? Like, all of our teachers were trying to get us, you know, jobs at the CBC, and, I mean, some people stuck there. I was a temp there for a bit, but I did that for 6 months, and I decided that, hey, I don't want to do this. It seemed like not a pathway that I wanted to take for myself personally, and so... there were not a lot of options in the city for me. I had to leave town. Marino was at Pagemasters for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
Which, for the folks at home who don't know it, it's like a copy editing third-party company.
Yeah, it's...
places like The Globe hire.
It's been called by people, not myself, a journalism sweatshop, I believe.
I call it that.
Yeah. Going into the journalism, quote-unquote, industry is... not necessarily, yeah, it's not a good way to go about it. It's certainly not going to leave you fulfilled as a journalist, I don't think. You kind of have to get back to it in a roundabout way.
How many of your colleagues from your graduating class, like, just left journalism and went to an adjacent, like, PR or media relations or writing -30 press releases?
So I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I would say there's probably around 60 people in our cohort. and there might be like 10 people doing journalism right now.
Like a woefully low number.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not going to name names here because I don't want to like speak for everyone. I can think of at least one person who was recently working as a reporter who made that jump, who was a great reporter. And it's sad. We don't want to make this jump. It's just that the amount of work that you have to do and the pay and the nature of the work, the editorial choices that come down to you, it's just not worth it. So I don't know. You have to, it's good in a way that we're having this reckoning. Honestly, it's good that shitty tech companies are forcing us to reevaluate what journalism is. And I think more than ever, I am against tying the corporate to journalism. It should be a nonprofit, like public service, however that can be facilitated.
Eric, why did you, what made you decide to jump into that just now?
Just jump back into it?
Yeah.
I'm so glad you asked me that question.
Just asking questions here.
Yeah.
This is Frost good. Nixon.
I like that we have journalists on all the time because they get to ask us questions too. I can't help myself. I think that most people, I know, right?
No, when you said it right away, I was like, yeah, that's of course.
But this is the thing about journalism that people don't understand is that most people are in it because they have to be in it. Like, it's like their brain is just wired to do this thing. And it's like, sometimes it sucks, but it is the most interesting thing you can do with your day. If you're doing something to get paid to, you know, pay the bills, mm-hmm. like you get to see something new every day. I left journalism for years. I quit my radio job. I'm like, I'm never doing that again. And then I worked comms for a couple years and I just started editing podcasts. Like I learned how to do software development and I started doing data journalism with it. Like I tried to leave and it pulled me back in. I just kind of like, you know, like when you're wandering around the house and you end up in a room, you're like, how did I get there? I kind of ended up here anyways. So, I mean, I'm resigned to my fate. I'm going to do this year-long investigation and I will continue on doing media until all the publications, you know, shutter. It's fine.
See, guys, that's the stick-to-itiveness attitude that I try to carry with myself each and every day. That's the lunch pail attitude I need.
Yeah, it's like, and I don't want people to be mistaken, like this is a curse. I was cursed by a witch to be a journalist, right? Like this is not something I chose for myself. It is just what I'm doing. I feel like that's enough about me though. I feel like we should talk about the news of the day. And since we've been talking about how great the media industry is specifically in Canada, we should talk about the big thing about Bill C-18 that mm-hmm. got passed, which is the Online News Act. And essentially the move in this bill is to try and recoup some of the revenue that Google and Facebook have taken away from larger news organizations, legacy news organizations. And I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that, you know, Google and Facebook absolutely cratered the business model of news organizations in this country and mm-hmm. other countries as well. I got problems with Bill C-18 specifically. Like, I don't know if it'll actually help someone like me who works for a newsroom of two people. Mm-hmm. But I think that I don't care about Google's revenue that much. And I think more money in news is actually not the worst thing in the world.
They're definitely saying what they think the work of journalists is worth.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What, you get all this content for free. Where do you think it comes from? Making a difficult decision. Journalists are out there making difficult decisions every day and they're working harder than your average tech bro. I'm sorry. I have deep feelings of disgust toward their action. As imperfect as this, I don't know a lot about C-18. I know it has its critiques, but I'm not about to side with some big US tech giant who that's just reaping incidental income because it has because it's got a market cornered. They're the Hillary Clinton of tech companies. They think they can just continue to exist and win by virtue of existing. The search doesn't work. Like, this was the push I needed to abandon Google services.
So for those people at home who want to know more about Bill C-18 and how it's going to affect news organizations, there was a Maple podcast that went out, and Drew Ojeje was interviewed. He's one of the founders of The Breach. Check that out. It's a great perspective on, you know, how it's going to affect small news organizations in so far as it will help their competition. The large news organizations make money, but it will not help them a whole ton. And I think that's a good perspective to take on it. I think there is another perspective that I haven't heard as much about, which is, why are so many people going to bat for tech companies right now? Because this is something that has happened in other places, Hunter. I don't know if you've seen any of this stuff about how a similar bill was passed in Australia.
Yes. Every time I hear the Australia example, and I think it's the minister, Pablo Rodriguez, who brings it up all the time of like, well, as you've seen in other Commonwealth nations, this is what we're trying to do has worked before. But it, every time it comes up, well, at some point, like Meta backed down, or not backed down, but they kind of went back to the negotiating table. And this kind of, my point kind of branches out to other things. Like anytime I've seen, whether it's like a government entity or whoever's in power, they're trying to, you know, work with a private industry, and they're trying to, you know, muscle through a bill or trying to negotiate. Both sides play a bit of like, well, you know, we're open to this, and like, oh, we're trying to do this, whether it's like they're doing the talking head panels on any show. But I forget what show it was the other day where it was like the Canadian representative of Meta who just flat out was like, no, we're not negotiating. Like, this is it. Like, this is, there's no, like, this is permanent. We're putting a permanent, this is a permanent solution to news on Facebook. And I hadn't seen that before. Anytime like a government is trying to like push something and be like, well, you know, we hope that we can lean on this company and hopefully they come to the negotiating table and try. And this was just a flat out like, no, we're not doing it. And I don't know if it's, that's just a step in negotiations and then eventually they will start to talk, or if this is Meta using Canada as like a major example of like, this is a G7 Commonwealth nation that we're just gonna, we're saying, no, this is, we're not negotiating. We're not offering any side to this.
I think it's bad in that initial, like, oh, that's bad that we can't use Google News's stupid aggregate thing anymore. But it's like, what's the, like, I have to maybe download a Canadian app and look a little bit more purposefully for the news, maybe. Like, people still are going to want to, that's the thing. People are still going to want to, like, read the news. People still need the news.
Yeah. And I mean, journalists do have a penchant of overvaluing themselves, which I will do right now. I am a frontline worker, and I'm actually also the troops. But we need good media in this country because we need to know what the hell's going on, right? I think we can see, like, in the last 5-6 years, a lot of local journalism outside of major cities has completely dried up, and we don't know what's going on. And there's like, there's stories coming out in New Brunswick about, you know, specific neurological disorders that are happening in specific geographic locations, and these stories aren't being broke. Like, Canada Land is doing the story. It's like, where are the reporters in New Brunswick that are on the ground seeing this stuff?
I have a horrifying fear of how towns that have like close to 100,000 people or at least 100,000 people are just chopping all of their local news coverage. And I think it really, I think I had this like ignorance when I was in college that I was like, well, big names or companies, like big entities that own papers throughout the country, they'll still keep it afloat. And like, even if it's just a weekly, if the paper is only going to be like once a week, well, at least there's still that coverage and there'll be the digital aspect. But I'm seeing now, like, even towns like when I graduated and I went to Guelph, Ontario has like a population of like 150,000 people. And they have like one city hall reporter or like just like one entity covering all the news in that general area. And then when I went to East York, like we had a newspaper at Metroland called The Beaches East York that shut down during COVID, and it would like cover all the neighborhood news. And then after that, nothing. So it's like, there's well beyond six figures of people who have all their local community stories that just don't get covered. And that's just two cities. If you go into like even bigger cities of like, you get your Windsor, Ontario's. And then if you go out east to like Kingston and Cornwall, Like now it's once a week papers and maybe a CTV, maybe a local CB, or you have a CBC that's not even like the TV. It's just radio. It's just CBC radio. Sorry, not to go on a tangent, but like, I just feel like it, like within a short frame, it evaporated really quickly.
Yeah. So I know right when we graduated, the big infamous paper swap with Metroland and Post Media happened, where both companies traded papers in towns where they were competing, and then they turned them into one paper, turned two competing papers into one larger paper, and they liquidated a whole bunch of that stuff, which like still makes my insides feel cold thinking about all those jobs that were lost, all those old crusty journalists that had decades of institutional knowledge of the town that they were living in. Mm-hmm. just gone, right? Like their desk was gone. Like they put the desk in the paper shredder.
It's like this generation, there is that gap. And now you see all these people sort of starting these startups and stuff, and they're just doing it. They're really literally pulling up their bootstraps and starting fresh.
Seriously. There's 40, 50, 60 year old reporters who cultivated relationships with city employees and with staffers of each political party, who have like spent years like perfecting something. And all of a sudden now the platform that they did it on is gone. And now you have to ask, I don't know, 64-year-old Joe, who's still working Windows 98. Like, hey, can you start a Substack and try to cultivate an audience and then charge $6.99 a month? Actually $24.99 a month if you do the founding member price. And it's like, man, I can't like FaceTime my kid on my birthday. I don't know how the hell I'm gonna start a website. It's like it's a new reality for these people.
Yeah, it's like, don't ask these people to start a Substack. They've been chain smoking since 4:30 in the morning. And they're thinking of the mean things that they're gonna say to the police chief. Like, leave them alone. They're doing their job. All of these people need platforms. This is a really important job. Like, holding people to account means sacrificing a lot of stuff in your personal life. A lot of these people are workaholics, and they're losing this space where they're, I do think that journalism is a civic responsibility.
100%. And it's just one last point. Like, it just scares me that we're in this, and like, whether we're in the midst of it or we've got friends who are working in it, like, I feel like we, maybe not us specifically, because we're, when you're in media or when you've gone to school for it, you know, it's part of your day-to-day life and you have these conversations all the time. But I just don't think that there's a generation that grew up day-to-day with CBC radio and getting the paper and having the ink stain on their finger that they had to wash off, and you can't wear white because then it stains it. And as they die off, an entire younger generation will have no appreciation for, why did the counselor not fill the potholes in my neighborhood? They just don't have the concept to, you know, read the paper every day or just keep up to date with whatever counselor was just elected and who is he friends with that got this approved, that screwed over this guy and then she was in on it. Like, there, that just, that entire world just, that doesn't exist for an entire different generation of news consumers. And as like, it's just as someone who's like, you know, I'm not yet 30, but the people I'm friends with, they kind of look at you like, you're a dinosaur. Like, who cares? Whatever. I got my push notification on the New York Times. Shut up.
This kind of leads us into the second bit of news that I did want to talk about before this this incredible column that we're going to read together. It's very big to the journalism industry. Post Media and the Toronto Star are talking about merging, which is, for me, I've always said the Toronto Star, despite its flaws, is one of the last good newspapers in the city, but also in the country. Like, it is an unbelievably important thing for the city to have the Toronto Star, and to have it fall into Post Media hands is something that I am personally not looking forward to.
it's not a move that I can tolerate. I know that. I don't know which it was. Was the Meta News worse? Was this probably this hit hard just because knowing the Star and its Reputation. You're right. I agree. It's one of the last few legacy journalistic institutions in this country that I respect.
Just going back to it, it's like full disclosure as someone, like I work for Metroland Media as a copy editor. And the thing that, like, I saw the news, and it's worrisome anytime you hear news in relation to our industry of, you know, losing jobs or of communities perhaps, you know, losing their daily or weekly papers. And anytime two major entities combine, you know that that's when you hear merger, you think of subtraction of jobs. And I won't comment on it too much, but I'm just like, I just worry that, like, you know, I see that news and I just wonder, like, what's the alternative? Not necessarily even that, like, I'm happy about it or mad about it. I just don't know if the way that we talk about media and how some entities are hemorrhaging money and how departments are getting shut down. And, you know, for the most part, like, they're not, you know, I'm not going to speak to the character of people who own newspapers or who are on the boards of these, but it's not like they want to shut down. I don't see a path for these papers other than what's happening.
Yeah, well, I do feel like there is, like, no path forward, right? On that note, that very disheartening note, I feel like we should all appreciate the fact that I am going full-time into media again. And it's going to work out perfectly. Everything's going to be fine. I have a way of landing on my feet.
You just got to put your best foot forward, man.
I just got to have a good attitude about it. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, just got to keep your head up.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be with one of my favorite local publications, The Hoser. They've been on the show before. I edit their podcast. They're the best people ever. But we're going to talk about a new news startup today that, I mean, the more I see of them, the more I dislike them. It's a place called The Hub. Have you guys heard of this thing?
Not before seeing the article in question. This would be my introduction to The Hub, but go on.
Hunter, how about you?
You know, the more, to paraphrase an old Canadian comic who's long died, the more I learn about The Hub, the less I care for.
Oh, I love Norm quotes. Yeah, The Hub is essentially, I mean, I don't want to be reductive, The Hub is founded by former Post Media people, came on the scene just a handful of years ago. They were in the same, you know, Facebook news accelerator as I would say good publications were. But if you look at the stuff that they're publishing, a lot of it is not from, you know, reporters. It's from specific talking heads and people connected to think tanks and consultancy groups and lobbyist firms and just this wild hodgepodge of, like, McDonald Laurier Institute stuff. Like, you'll see stuff from C.D. Howe. I mean, it's post-media, but somehow, like, less serious.
My partner told me this before I came on. She was reading through the site, and she said, The Hub exists to make conservatism palatable for disaffected. It's just enough that they're like, for some people, it's like, like that. I didn't think about that.
It's got like the genteel conservatism, right? It's pulling a John Tory where it's like, I'm just a regular guy.
Yeah, it makes sense if you're like uncritical and don't do any deeper reading or thinking.
Soft C.
Oh yeah, soft C. Conservative, you know?
Yeah, baby. That's all right.
That's all right. I'll take that. That's not going to cut. Yeah. But this is what it is, right? And if you look at their offerings, they slide into some weird shit once in a while. But it's all stuff from people that, I mean, are not journalists, in my opinion. Maybe that's mean. I'm going to say it's my opinion so no one sues me. These people are policy people at organizations that are taking money from other interests. Our current writer has an incredible bio on her consultancy group website. I don't know if you guys want to hear it.
Oh, man, by all means.
All right.
Let her rip.
So just so everybody knows, this column is written by Ginny Roth, who is a partner at Crestview Strategy based in Toronto. Crestview Strategies is like sort of like an all-purpose strategy firm. They do a whole bunch of stuff, you know, government relations, lobbyist stuff. Like, I looked at the Meet Our Team thing on their website, and it's sort of like the B team of Canadian politics. Like Gurtan Singh, who's Jugmeet Singh's brother, former MPP, is also at Crestview Strategies doing stuff, you know. I'm assuming it's sort of like an island of lost toys for politicians and like lobbyists and stuff. When they don't have another job, they just become a consultant.
I will say this, while I vehemently disagree with this article, and we'll get into it, I did see like a Ginny Roth tweet recently. Like I did a pretty harsh quote tweet of this article when it came out, and it was like a pretty normal take. And I was like, all right, this is maybe a person with a bunch of different thoughts, like whatever. So I don't know, small secrets, whatever.
Okay, well, we should know her employment record, because I feel like it informs a lot of things. So Ginny serves as the agency of record for many of the largest food and beverage, consumer packaged goods, pharmaceuticals, and extractive industries in the world.
Good for her. That's great.
Yeah, advising multinational corporations, domestic companies, and nonprofits on government relations in Canada. She is a sought-after political commentator. Appearing as a frequent panelist on major television and radio outlets, Ginny is also a contributor to The Hub and National Post.
It's a murderer's row of talent there, I tell you.
Oh,
what,
my man. God. Pharmaceuticals, extractive industries, food and beverage, consumer packaged goods. Like, okay, so like Loblaws, Barrick Gold. Like, what is that?
She sprinkled a few nonprofits in there, so you know she's got the heart of the people in mind. You know, nonprofits are great.
And as a former nonprofit comms guy, it depends on the nonprofit. I'll say that.
But what's the line from, you guys remember in Mad Men when Bert Cooper was like, Don, charity is the path to power. It's like, all that bullshit about, like, you know, being like charity and like, oh, we care for the people. Like, no, that's just the step to, you know, being a decision maker. Anyway, continue. Well,
I got some more stuff on Ginny. So prior to joining Crestview Strategy team, Ginny worked at Queen's Park as an organizer for the Progressive Conservative Party of Ontario and has been a lifelong political activist. Ginny brings experience as a former staffer and political campaigner, managing a team of professionals serving clients in every jurisdiction in Canada.
If you're a PC party insider, I wouldn't use the term political activism, but that's
no,
just
no, you're a shill. You're like a paid flack. Like you're not an activist. She's like a paid flack, though. Okay, or a former paid flack. Now she's a paid consultant. So it's just,
that's what, like, we'll get into this more, but like that, I feel like this website, like it's predominantly like the party and the think tanks just come up with like, what are palatable ideas? And then like, what's something that maybe like we could like push as a policy in like, what is it now? June 2020. What's something like going into the new year that maybe we could run with heading into the 2024 or 25 election? And then it's like, they just put these out early just to see what the discourse says.
Yeah. To test the waters, you know, like, it's really funny how bad this piece is, though. They kind of like reverse engineer these things a little bit. Like, this isn't a legitimate idea. This is like, oh, let's test the waters on how do we get more people into the military? How do we get people talking about that? Mandatory service. Like, what the fuck?
Like, hey, this could be great for young Canadians, you know, because we just don't have a national spirit. I don't know if you know, it's Canada Day next week.
And, oh, my God.
You know what? You know what? After, you know, I know that we've been kind of learning about the horrors of our nation for the last couple of years. And,
yeah.
You know, we always point at the South and go, not us. Mm-mm. Maybe. maybe it actually is pretty bad. So how do we get the youngins? That's how you say it, right? That's how do we get the youngins to love this great land again? Let's force them to join the military. That's the way that we're gonna
make them do war crimes. Like that's this
yeah,
is the move.
Like with the emoji, you know, because kids love that. The yellow hands on Twitter, they love
all that energy that these youths are putting into their grimace shake skits on the TikTok could be going to serve Canada's national spirit.
I was gonna say they probably like in their ads, like one guy wrote like "slay queen," but it was like, you know, in the context of the military.
Yeah, it's
I don't think it really lands that well. So,
oh god,
probably take out "slay."
Yeah, yeah, like. This piece is incredibly tone deaf, by the way. This piece is also guilty of this shit. At one point, she blames the kids being on their dang cell phones. It is like this unbelievably lazy thing. I mean, we've run into pieces like this before where they think the military does a whole lot more than they should. Of course, I'm referring to Matt Gurney's piece where he was talking about how the COVID-19 situation in long-term care homes was a perfect example of why we should invest more in our military. I'm assuming because they were going to bomb all the long-term care facilities.
Yeah, Agnes.
That's what you get.
Yeah, keep your head up.
It's this idea that, oh, we have this military, so what else can it do? Oh, we'll just get care workers. And of course, that's not the solution. The solution is hire more care workers and pay them more money so there's more of them. But we can get into that on the piece. This is, I think, one of the stupidest things we've ever read. For a while, I thought, you know, a good rule for this podcast was let's keep it to like actual newspapers. But I mean, considering the quality of the opinion pages in some outlets that we cover fairly often, I feel like it's pretty comparable to this.
I think if you write something so bad that you become the Twitter person of the day, even though Twitter has dramatically diminished, yeah, you're pretty qualified to come on Big Shiny Takes. I mean, as
what did you say? What did you say when you saw this piece, Marino? What was really mean that you said?
I deleted it later because I felt it was too acerbic. I'm trying to speak more from the scar than from the wound.
Oh, that's really nice. I said that I retweeted it from the podcast account, and I said whoever wrote this should be immediately enlisted. I think that's fair.
That's fair. That's a more fair criticism. It's more like, yeah, you put on the boots first. I think I called her like an unserious consultant or something like that, or useless consultant. Those were my words.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, no, we like this might be controversial, but I think we should send Ginny to the Donbass like immediately. like no delay, one way flight. Let's go. Because
you imagine serving in a unit with Ginny Roth and Adam Szybo.
Oh my god, no. No, because I would never write something like this. So this would not ever be a consequence that I'd have to face. I think immediate conscription. If you're talking about other people being, you know, sent to mandatory service.
Absolutely.
Put up or shut up.
That's how, like, it used to be, like, if you ran for office, it was because you served, like, in some capacity. Like the Kennedy, I don't know, I forget who was the father of all the Kennedy boys. He put all his boys in the war to be like, I want you guys to come back war heroes. And then one of them died. So that backfired. But they all came back and they ran for office because they were able to be like, I've gone through the experience. Like, I am a veteran.
Yeah, now I can do things. But no, now we just become consultants and we tell, you know, young people, specifically probably, you know, poor people that can't get some sort of exception to mandatory service, that they should do a year. They should do a year to protect this beautiful nation that has never done anything wrong.
Never not once. Never not once.
Hey, why is there a recruitment issue in the military these days anyways? Like, what's going on?
It's just because, you know, it's not cool anymore, man. You know?
Oh, right.
Remember when it used to be cool to serve? Remember when... Go ahead.
Hunter, would you be willing to take us away on this thing?
I'd never ask, man. I'm flattered. Of course. All right. I'm going to read the title and the subhead for it, too, because I write a lot of subheads for work, and I always like to judge others on their work because I'm my mother's son. All right. How a mandatory year of service for young Canadians could solve our national identity crisis. Just like, I don't know, like, man, just reading that headline alone, I know that, like, I get mad at friends of mine and other people who, we're guilty of this on Twitter, where, like, you read the headline and it's so, like, outrageous. And most of the time, writers don't write their own headlines. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like they just get quote tweeted, but nobody's clicking the link, you know, reading the story. Yeah. They just read the headline. Mm-hmm. This is one of the rare instances where the headline doesn't do justice. How truly idiotic this story is. Here's the subhead too. It could bolster our ailing military and inject long-term care homes and child care centers with the labor they desperately need. Just
you I get what you're saying, Hunter. You read like the head and the subhead, you read the display copy, and you're like, wow, that's pretty stupid at a glance. And yeah, you do go in to read, and she's thought a lot about this stupid idea. She has fully interrogated it.
Well, yeah, but like with, I mean, I feel like she's ill-equipped to interrogate it then. But like this this is like one of these things where, okay, I get in the like right-wing circles, like the national identity crisis is sort of like a dog whistle for, oh, we're supposed to feel bad for, you know, doing a little bit of genocide. Like, and it's like, oh, we're actually, maybe we're the bad guys. And it's like, we used to be the good guys. It's like, well, no, you didn't. People just didn't talk about the horrible shit that happened here. And so when they say like our national identity crisis, it's like this weird caricature of the country that they decided was the real thing is no longer tenable given the facts that the public knows. And so they're like, we can reestablish that. How are we going to do that? Oh, we're going to send people to boot camp. like that's so fucked up. And then on top of that, like she tries to glue on, you know, the crisis in long-term care facilities as like, oh, the military can do that. My grandfather's in a long-term care home. I do not want the troops there.
Yeah. Does she know what the job of being a soldier is? It's essentially to go out and kill the enemy.
What do you think they're trained to do? Like, what do you think the
job of a soldier is? To make sure that people don't reach the age of someone who needs to be in a long-term care home. Like, well beyond the age. That's your, you know, that's your, like, year-end goal.
This is the thing, and I feel like it leads to a lot of jokes about, you know, like, oh, they're solving the crisis by removing the need for them. But it's like, we would never make those jokes on this podcast because we love our old folks. And we actually don't want the military in our long-term care homes. On that, Hunter, do you want to jump into the piece?
Yeah, man, let's do it. Oh, good Lord. All right. With Canada Day around the corner, it's natural to reflect on our country's national identity, or lack thereof. When I was a kid getting a flag painted on my cheek at the community center, my parents and their peers were thinking about Quebec separatism and Western alienation.
Really? Sorry to cut off, but like, really? That's what they were thinking of?
Where did they grow up?
Yeah, not like, where's the cooler?
It's like very geographically specific and like thousands of kilometers between those two things. You know, like maybe she lived in a very Quebecois corner of Alberta where those two things were on everyone's minds.
Was she raised by like an Ottawa press scrum? Like, is that?
Yes.
Is that what she's like? You know what? My parents, you know, were scared. They used to hide under their desks about was Quebec separatism and the West.
I think you're touching on a really salient point. Like, just normal people aren't out there fucking worried about our national identity. They're just like trying to have a fun day on Canada Day. Maybe they're more or less aware about the horrors that happened in the past these days. And that's about it. Like, can't that just be allowed to exist? Do we have to fret about it? We do, apparently. Oh,
100%.
It's the most important thing. Maybe it's the only thing. And I don't know. Like, I am a dirtbag from the city. I'm one of these, like, Laurentian elites that these people pretend to hate, you know, as a way of getting in with the people that they're trying to manipulate into doing the dirty work for them. But when did Canada have a strong national identity? Isn't our entire thing just like Molson Canadian ads and Tim Hortons and not being America?
I got a few books on the go, and one of them is I don't know if you know John Shannon, who used to be a personality on Sportsnet. And he's talking about, it's a book about his career. It's quite good, Adapt or Die. And he's just talking about being a producer of Hockey Night in Canada. And he's like, I'll tell you the truth, I wasn't much for politics, but our Canadian identity was beating the Soviets in 72. And Scotty Bowman coaching five straight cups for Le Canadien. And I'm like, yeah, that's like, that's the extent of like what we were. It was hockey and international hockey. That's like that's...
the two sports.
Yeah. You know,
it is one of those things where like John Shannon accidentally made a very salient leftist point where there is a vacuum of what this country is. And I mean, it's because the people that are trying to push what the Canadian national identity is are weird lobbyists and campaign people, you know, like politicians are trying to come up with a thing. And it's like everybody else is just trying to live their life, trying to pay rent.
Seriously. Like we're well beyond, well, not well beyond, we're like past 150 years of existing. And just now we're like, hey, Eric, what's our, you know, July 1st is coming up. What's our national identity?
It's
a great question.
At this point, maybe it's not going to happen. You know, like after 100, we gave it a shot. Like there's not going to be an identity. Maybe we should move on. Maybe we should worry about actual things like building trains and housing.
That might improve a sense of cohesive national identity if more people weren't feeling just like economically desperate.
This Canada has no national identity thing is now a huge problem, specifically because why? What is this preventing from happening right now?
Do you think like columns, like we were talking about how these columns are used as like to test like how palatable they are to the general population? Like, are we just trying to like forge national identity into like, you know what? We just got to strengthen the military. Our military sucks. The other G7 nations are pretty pissed at us right now. So how can we beat
it up? I think you're right. I think this is like, just, is it just a roundabout that simple way to get to that.
Honestly.
I mean, probably. It tries to make a lot of really lazy arguments, but the thing that they seem to care about is the G7 payments and our commitments to NATO, which we'll get to in the piece. Should we jump back into it?
Of course. All right. We were talking about the, you know, Quebec.
Yeah, alienation. And,
the West. Jean Chéri tried to channel this version of national identity crisis into a successful Conservative Party leadership bid. But he proved that while nationalism is still a driving force in Quebec politics and Western alienized... Sorry, she mentions it twice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you're trying to fill your word count here? Sorry. I'll finish it. Yeah. But he proved that while nationalism is still a driving force in Quebec politics and Western alienation continues to energize voters in Alberta, our country's current identity crisis, it's about something different.
So I feel like with every mention of Jean Charest, we need to mention the fact that Jeremy got COVID at his campaign launch in Alberta, which was the launch of the saddest party leader campaign I can remember in a very long time. Like, Charest, like, really, he jebbed it up on this thing.
Big time jeb.
Yeah.
Big time jeb.
Jebbing around, not really pushing anybody, not really getting anything. Like, I don't think he channeled anything. Like, there wasn't an identity crisis. He tried to do like this compassionate conservative thing that is completely played out and didn't work with modern day conservatives because he was a lib who, despite having, you know, kind of lukewarm policies, is basically being a communist these days for specific demos in the Conservative Party.
Mm-hmm. That's like the last taste of it too, for like a portion of conservatism, of like the true, like, you know, the, you know, socially liberal, fiscally conservative, you know, I just, I put the progressive and progressive conservatism.
Yeah. Yeah,
remember Diefenbaker, you know, remember those days? And now they're like, nah, get the fuck out of here, man. Yeah. No, that's not, don't do that.
I mean, those people were annoying in their own way, because it's like, no, like you just don't want to feel bad about not paying taxes. So you're like, I'm socially liberal. It's like, yeah, but you know, being fiscally conservative is also being socially conservative, right? Like if you're not willing to pay for policies that will make people's lives better, you're socially conservative, which I mean, I feel like that conversation's been had enough times that people have given up on that. Now it's just, you know, like Trudeau's a communist party of China asset kind of stuff. Like we're just in the QAnon zone these days.
Like as a mainstream too. Like as if it's almost like it's I'm going to get more. I got a point on that later that I'll get to, but it's just like we've seen it deteriorate over the years. But like now that's just like that's a party policy, is that the World Economic Forum is, you know, trying to poison our children.
Like on that note, Ginny brings up a fairly major character that we have to deal with these days.
Pierre Poilievre came closer by targeting cancel culture and defending our shared history. But even that doesn't feel up to the task of salvaging an eroding Canadian identity.
Are they talking about like cancel culture? Like this isn't about stand-up comedians this time. This is about like statues getting toppled.
Yeah. Right? I think so. It's totally like, think of it too. Like we were talking about the McDonald Laurier Institute who pens these columns. Like those two names in themselves are like, if you look through the lens of 2023, are a black mark in Canadian history. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain, like on that side of the spectrum, it's an inability to be like, yes, they did some things as prime minister and they helped forge the nation. And they were also despicably evil in some ways too.
Yeah, they were virulent racists that didn't actually care about human beings.
Hasn't Scotland like officially denounced John A. Macdonald? I believe that.
They tore down his birthplace. They used to have it as like a monument and they just now are like, yeah, he's from here.
That rules.
Scotland. Whatever. Always with the W's from Scotland. Like I'm a big fan.
Let's go Glasgow Rangers. At the height of the global pandemic, when truckers from rural British Columbia clashed with public servants, you know, remember that?
Yeah. Let's get to the end of the sentence. We'll talk about it.
All right. And our own prime minister was stoking flames of division. Stoking flames. Yeah. It became clear that these Canadians had no shared experience to refer to, not even a common language with which to start a conversation. Post-COVID, Canadians have never been lonelier. Our economy is desperate for labor. We can't get anything built. And we're struggling to care for our young and our old.
Okay, let's talk about those poor rural truckers from British Columbia clashing with the political elite in an Ottawa neighborhood. So, like, Ginny here is being incredibly reductive. She's talking about the trucker convoy, which I don't know if you guys remember, was truckers from all over, actually, and people who weren't truckers just showing up in the streets and sort of occupying.
They really gave truckers a bad name, you know, like I remember like CBC did a story. They talked to like trucker like unions.
Yeah.
And it was like 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 were like, no, we don't support this. No, this is not good.
Yeah, this is
bad for business.
it obfuscates the politics of there's just a bunch of right wing chuds going to Ottawa and harassing the locals. That's what it was. Yeah.
Well, this is like an incredible thing. And it's like, OK, so how did Trudeau stoke the flames of division in Ginny's opinion? Well, it was probably that, you know, he said that they were like weird racists, which was true. He said that, you know, they were dangerous and it wasn't, you know, good what they were doing. I like when people block streets. I don't like it when they block streets because they want to, you know, do a soft coup on the prime minister.
You don't like when they create weeks of noise pollution?
I don't think that's a good thing, right? Like I will defend anyone's right to protest because I like when things get thrown. I don't think this was a protest. Mm-hmm. I think this was like a really, really poorly run fascist march, right?
Like there are good people on both sides. Both sides.
Oh yeah, that's what I also wanted to say. This idea that they need to have a common language or a shared experience. No, I don't think we need unity on this one. Those people can get.
They asked the governor general to remove the sitting prime minister.
It was getting Pence to overturn the votes. It was their equivalent.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the pathetic Canadian version of January 6th, essentially. And the fact that it was like so lukewarm and so like disjointed, and it ended up with like weird guys in a hot tub in the middle of the road, is like there's your Canadian identity.
I don't know. I don't know what says freedom more than two guys chilling in a hot tub.
It's, you're 5 feet apart. This column is so unserious, though, right? Like, this is like, look at what Trudeau did. He stoked the flames of division. And then they slide into, this is a thing that particularly bothers me about conservatives, where they correctly identify something that, you know, post-COVID, things aren't super great. People are lonely. The economy is bad. But they don't say like the economy's in the shitter. They say that it's desperate for labor, which they mean like no one wants to work anymore, which is not true. People want to work enough so they can live. And we are struggling to care for our young and our old. This is a correct this is a correct identification of a problem, which is really like the first step to a solution. But it is not a solution if we continue to read.
That's how so many of these, like when you see these like outrageous hot takes from a right-wing reactionary or from a think tank, when they present an idea, there is a kernel of truth. There is something that, regardless of ideology, you're like, that's true. Like, you know what, this particular thing is bad, or there is something that I can relate to, or my colleagues or my family can relate to. But then it gets bastardized and swished with a horrific idea. And then, but to some people, you know, whether it's media literacy or whether they're just like willingly ignorant, they see the kernel of truth as the, you know, it's like lighting the tinderbox. They're like, okay, now I can ride this story. I can go with whatever idea there is, and, you know, I can get behind it.
This is the thing that the right is incredibly good at, is identifying the issue, right? But then we go in a very strange direction. So Hunter, this is like the start of the big pitch in this column.
Hey, Eric and Marino, what if we could build a common identity, inculcate a shared national vision, and address some of our economy's biggest challenges all at once? 18-year-old Canadians should be required to perform a mandatory year of service. Now, wait. In the military, or caring for seniors, or children.
It's so good. It's like, okay, so it's all going to be the military, Jesus. But some of it's going to be like killing people, and the other bit of it is going to be serving oatmeal and like cleaning bed sheets and like making.
Look, it's not good. All putting your gun together and taking it apart and putting it back together. It's not all that easy.
It's easy.
It's not all carving "Born to Kill" in your helmet and getting written up by your commanding officer for it. Sometimes it's helping the elderly walk to the dining hall. You know, sometimes it's that.
You can listen to "Let the Bodies Hit the Floor" if you help kids. You can listen to it there too. You can listen to it on the battlefield. You can listen to it helping Agnes and Angus.
You know what will boost national morale? Forcing people to either be a soldier or work in child and elder care. Those are things that work for everybody. Those three options. There's definitely nobody who you would just like not want in any of those positions.
Yeah, this is a fail-safe solution. I do like the weird combination of those two things. It's like, okay, so we've got, you know, organization that we use to kill people over here, and then we've got long-term care facilities and child care over here. In Parry Sound, a place where I did radio for a bit, there was a motel that also had a nightclub underneath it. And I always thought that was like the strangest combination. But I think childcare and military is like, it takes it. Oh, the place was called Rumors, if you're ever in Parry Sound. It's across the street from Town Hall.
Like, there's not even a comma between them. I'm looking at it.
In the military.
In the military.
Or
caring for seniors or children. Either or.
And so, like, I do think that this is like, they think they're being clever, where it's like, it's in the military or this other thing that's not the military, even though it's the same apparatus that is forcing them to do the service, that apparatus would be the military.
In the military for or caring for seniors or children. They should be encouraged to serve in a place they didn't grow up in and meet people different from themselves. It could bolster our ailing military, inject long-term care homes and child care centers with the labor they desperately need, increase birth rates, and cure loneliness. And it would give us something meaningful to celebrate on Canada Day, a shared national identity. Now, listen, guys, I just want to say...
Well, getting ready for today's show on the Big Shiny Takes podcast, I went through some of Ginny's older columns, and she mentions here, so let's just read out this last sentence again. With the labor they desperately need, or inject long-term care homes and child care centers with the labor they desperately need, increase birth rates. Now, she has a strange obsession with increasing birth rates. She's written several columns on conservatism motherhood.
Oh no.
On raising a family and how because of our declining birth rates, that's only going to mean a declining workforce, which will hurt our GDP and our standing on the national scene and on the global perspective. I don't understand the declining birth rate argument other than just like, let's have a lot of kids. But from the other articles that she's written that aren't even about birth rates, she shoehorns it in and makes it part of her identity.
Well, that's a crazy thing to include in this, by the way, and I'll get into that in a little bit. I'm always worried when conservatives are worried about declining birth rates because, I mean, there's a way of handling the fact that there is a declining birth rate in this country. It's to increase immigration, and they don't think that's a solution. And like,
yeah,
we can kind of come up with a couple reasons why conservatives, you know, might not be interested in increasing immigration.
If I can just cut you off, she mentions immigration as a counter argument to increasing the birth rate, to which she says, it's just not enough. Says it right here.
Does she know there's more people outside the country than inside the country? Does she know that?
Nah, those are fake numbers.
Oh, are you right? Sorry. But like, I think that when you're writing a column about the military and why there should be mandatory military service, and in the past year, there have been multiple scandals rocking the Canadian Armed Forces about sexual assault happening and not being actually addressed in any meaningful way. Talking about increasing birth rates by forcing mandatory military service is an incredibly fucked up thing to do.
Like, let's be cynical here. Even if you're trying to look at it from a war hawk perspective, what is, does the increasing birth rate just mean more people? Like a bigger military.
More people to send into the meat grinder, baby.
Like that's all it is. We're just like, you know, like it's, I'm just hearing McConaughey being like, those are rookie numbers. You know, those are rookie numbers. Just got to pump up those numbers, baby.
It's
just got to keep on going.
Instead of wasting our money to immigrate people who don't want to serve, we could do that for free.
Yeah. And I just like, I think it's really fucked up that they think that a mandatory year of service in childcare is necessary because, like, one, that kind of just sounds like indentured servitude in a certain level. And two, like, you can get enough people to work in childcare and long-term care. Pay them more.
Yes, exactly. It's just a matter. That's the entire, this article is insane. You just need to make people, there are people qualified for and who want to do that work. I don't want to do any three of those things, but make those jobs good and people will go.
Another thing about this column, the disdain that this person has for healthcare workers and childcare workers. It's just palpable. Like the idea that the military, which, I mean, I used to play beer league with a couple military guys. If we ever went to war, we would not win. We would lose. They couldn't even like break out properly.
They weren't a cohesive unit.
They're not a cohesive unit. No, they can't do war well? How the fuck are they going to do childcare well? How are they going to take care of our elderly?
I'm assuming that this is for free too. Like, you're doing this mandatory year for free.
Yeah.
You're not getting paid in this. You're not, you know, getting anything out of it.
You just won't go to jail for not serving your year.
Yeah. It's free labor.
Yeah.
They'll give you some hardtack.
Yeah, I'm sure you get cool boots too, and maybe you get to shoot a gun once and twice.
But what they did, so one thing I wanted to bring up, so I knew that we were recording tonight, just out of the blue, funny enough, Ginny appeared on CTV's The Debate last night.
Oh.
And this topic was the second topic on the half hour program. And I'm just like, I watched the segment because, you know, I fetishize my own pain. And she was like, look, it's not conscription, it's community service. She tried to explain it as like, this is a, you know, it's just a thought experiment.
Oh,
like I'm throwing it out there. Oh. We're just seeing what it is. And what they did was, before the segment started, they had a Canadian military promotional video. Like, it looked like one of these like post 9/11 like Call of Duty ads, and it said like, you can spend a year helping the Canadian military for free, everything paid for. I thought like his next thing was going to be like ESPN presented by Smirnoff Ice.
It's so bad.
It was scary.
I don't like it when ads ever line up with the segment. Ever. Like, that's a huge miss by CTV. But also, like, it's just a thought experiment. This is so stupid, and it's poisoning the discourse well. Because there's serious things that we do need to talk about. Like housing and trains. You know, I like trains. I'm going to keep talking about trains. Maybe we should jump back into this thing.
One thing that I saw from last night's segment, I'll mention it. And I'll just read through this whole blurb here. Give me, Lord, give me the strength to try and muscle through it here. All right. As a matter of public policy, mandatory service is almost always contemplated in the context of military conscription.
Yeah.
And it's worth considering the case of Israel,
which has mandatory military service.
They're the top of the heap.
which is just... It's almost always considered this way. Anyway, here's an example of it being used this way.
Yeah. Hey, just in case, you know, in case. Eric, I don't know if you've ever been to Israel, but she writes here, if you've traveled the country, you've no doubt encountered groups of teenagers in army fatigues, looking like they're experiencing a rite of passage akin to summer camp.
Oh, is that what it's like?
It's just... Remember when you got your first kiss from Becky Gunderson? Yeah, it's just like that.
You can evict a Palestinian family from their home and make friends to last a lifetime. This is super fucked up.
Yeah. And while mandatory military service is rather more existential for a country under constant threat of attack from its neighbors, it's worth looking at what other impacts the program has had beyond strong defense forces. Israel's birth rate is almost double Canada's.
I'm just talking about the birth rate.
Oh, baby, don't wait.
Stop.
It punches above its weight on innovation, and it tends to score high on measures of happiness and longevity. It's not hard to imagine how the effect of most of the country's population joining together in training and mission at the cusp of adulthood would strengthen social bonds.
They're doing a lot more than just punching up in terms of innovation. They're also doing a lot of punching down at Palestinians.
Yeah, well, there's such a crazy thing to put in this column. She is attributing the country's happiness and levels of innovation to the mandatory military service.
It's downright evil. We can say it. I'm comfortable. I've listen, I know people exercise their editorial choice, and you know, Lord be it for me to throw a stone at a glass house, but good God, man. Like, this is truly one of the And look, let me just like, I'll make this point. Like I work in mainstream media and I work for newspapers and I edit columns from different opinion writers. And some of them I don't agree with, some I do. Some I'm like, I don't know if I'd touch that. But I rarely comment on them because usually there's a nugget of truth or there's something they want to point out. This is downright despicable.
It truly mm-hmm. is. And it takes such a sad person to go, you know what would help people make friends? War. Mandatory military service. And they have to go to war. They can hang out. They can make like matching bracelets or something. It'd be so much fun. Like this is sick shit. And it's also like it comes to another point that I think people don't really talk about is that a lot of adults on the right do not have friends. they just don't. Like, why do you think you need the military to make friends? What happened in your life, Ginny, that you think this is going to be like an actual solution?
She mentions too, before we keep reading, she mentions on the CTV segment about how like this will increase social skills among young adults. This will help, like, you know, kids are lonely. Kids are lonely. Oh, yeah, and so this is the way to, you know, amalgamate yourself with your community, your society, and this will, you know, this will open up your social life. You know, young people aren't having kids anymore, young people aren't getting married, and young people, I'm not exaggerating, she said this on not live national television last night, young people aren't having sex enough anymore.
She's a sick woman. She's not well.
This is why they need to go to war. Yeah,
she needs to mind her business, first of all. But second of all, like, this is just very concerning behavior, Ginny. You need to calm it down. We're all getting concerned here at the Institute.
This isn't even like a conservative think piece of like, you know, I'm all in favor of spending our public money in a good way, you know, but I just feel like the public services aren't good enough. So I think we should look to the private sector for something. This is, you know, these kids just aren't having enough sex. So they got to go to war. You know, that's what I think. That's the level.
Let me tell you, I'm thinking about this a lot.
All right. Continuing. And look, it's not like Canada's military couldn't use the boost. We haven't met our NATO spending obligations in years. And our armed forces are facing a worsening recruitment challenge, seemingly unable to attract young Canadians to opt voluntarily into service. Imagine the boost mandatory service could give our military and the pride young people would feel having contributed to their country's strength on the world stage.
First of all, what happened to this being, you know, a military and then a secret other thing that isn't the military? If this is about increasing our NATO spending obligations and boosting our military, why did you say that it wasn't about the military? It was about getting people to care about their community and make friends and shit.
But it's not the military. It's not about, you know, making our allies around the world happier that we're not, you know, dedicating 47% of our GDP or whatever the hell, you know, to I want every damn kid in fatigues. Let me tell you,
boots on the ground, baby.
I want those green, light green, dark green onesies for the newborns. Yeah. That's what.
Yeah,
they're just going out there and meeting people, right? That's the word that she used. They're meeting people in somewhere different where countries.
All these enlisting is just getting to know someone from somewhere you're not from.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know, war crimes are a lot like getting to know you games in a lot of ways when you do them together.
No, it's like dating. Yeah.
This is where the argument really, really does fall apart, because she plays her hand where she's like, this is the thing I actually care about. But also, she tries to hang on to the points from before, but it's not important to her. She doesn't give a shit. If she cared about, you know, the crisis in long-term care facilities, there's multiple easier and more practical solutions that you can go, rather than building an entire new apparatus inside the military to force children and provide care for a year.
Yeah, I'm Sergeant Hunter Crowler of the Palliative Care Division of the of the Canadian Army.
I had to do an IV, but I didn't actually know how to do that, so I just shot your grandpa. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't have long either, so yeah, yeah. It's fine.
Who's gonna train these people? Like, PSWs have to go to college. Like, it's a serious program, you know. Nurses have to go through school. Like, medical professionals, paramedics, everybody has to go to school to do this stuff. Are they just gonna in-house this stuff, or are they gonna like third party it and pay a bunch of money to these colleges to get people in the military to learn this?
You're just going to make a public draft also to just expose any random person to kids? That doesn't seem smart to me. I think a lot of people would use that for nefarious purposes.
We'll get into this more as we keep reading, but that's the other part. We're not just talking about the long-term care facilities. Like, for a group of people that are so like, don't talk to my kids, mm-hmm. don't touch my kids, these groomers are trying to get
kids.
I'm just going to let some, you know, connect the dots, zit-faced teenager yeah. just start hanging out with my children
yeah.
at a facility. That's fine. That's cool. The kid who failed 3 weed tests and now has to watch my kid. That's fine.
Yes. Like, these very simple questions do not have answers in this column. And I just think Ginny really didn't think anybody would scrutinize it that deeply, you know?
I'm glad we're reading it, because it was just some sort of like Twitter of the day crappy headline that everybody mocked, but it is more perverse than its immediate headline. You were right, Hunter.
It's that's what I mean. Like, we don't, sometimes we read the headline and a lot of the time the story isn't as bad. Like I said earlier, like, it's just a headline that was misleading or clearly clickbaity. But this is like devious. It really is like devious writing that is being weaved into a normalcy that I'm really uncomfortable with.
Yeah. Do you think that the editor at the Hub went like, oh, this is too fucked up, I'm going to try and slide it back a bit?
I think my guess is they probably didn't give it too much scrutiny. It's just like, yeah, whatever. Sure. Yeah.
Sounds I'm worried right. that it was just edited for grammar.
Right.
Like it wasn't yeah. edited for length, which by the way, it's way too long
yeah.
or, or for content. It was just like, you used the wrong there right here. Oh, okay. Yeah. Just fix that.
Yeah. 100%.
And I don't like when people start sentences with "and." She does that a couple of times. That's, you know, just a personal pet peeve mm-hmm. of mine. Mm-hmm. And service to country doesn't have to just mean military. For a wealthy country, we struggle to adequately care for our eldest and our youngest. Long-term care homes and home care providers across the country are facing chronic labor shortages, and provinces are struggling to meet child care demand. A lot of the need in healthcare is for highly skilled labor, but some of the demand for care could be filled by eager young people with minimal training. Particularly if we remove artificial credential barriers where they're unnecessary.
This is such a stupid argument. There are credential barriers, but they're for like medical professionals that work in different countries not being able to practice here. But like, those are there so people don't get killed. Those credentials are there so people know the legal and appropriate way to do things in, you know, Canada's medical system.
I said previously that I had deleted my retweet of this column where I called Ginny a useless consultant. I think I hit the nail on the head. If this is the kind of tripe that she is putting out into the world, like, I'm really glad I am exploring the depths of her sickness. Ginny, I hate to break it to you. Those people are way more qualified in infinite ways than you to be just like, I don't know, anything. Just they have a purpose. They contribute to the world and make the world a better place simply by making someone's life better. And you're just, for you to like, crap on their credentials like that and say, let's call them unnecessary. You're unnecessary.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with
amen
that.
yeah. Now, not everyone who helps to care for kids needs to be an early childhood educator. you know your children.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not everybody. Yeah. Not everybody. And hey, and we learned through the pandemic that those caring for seniors benefit from staff with even just a small amount of training.
It's so fucked up. So, like, this is the thing about Ginny. Like, I didn't know that she was so obsessed with birth rates. Doesn't seem to care about the kid after it's born. Very unconcerned about children, really concerned with birth rates. And then, like, as soon as they're old and they're no longer useful to the economy, like, fuck off, Grandpa.
I just don't understand how it's the comeback I always see on Twitter of people saying you're pro-life until they're born, you know, and then you don't care about these children. But this column right here, like, as if you're accusing, like, the necessary training to deal with children and the elderly as, like, meddling bureaucracy. Like, what are we doing here? Like, we're not even having a debate. This isn't even, like, a healthy forum for discussion. This is like, you don't need that much, you know? If they're blue, then you've screwed up. You've gone too far. That's where...
It means they're not breathing.
Well, yeah.
It's just very, this website is free. People will just say things. Source, I made it up.
Yeah, that's what it is, though. Like, this is... Listen, like, early childhood education is a hard thing to do, and you do not want the wrong people doing it, because, like, even people that get the credentials sometimes are not people that should be working with children, right? And this thing is taking kids who are not legally old enough to drink in most provinces and putting them around kids that need to go to daycare, which means they're not old enough to be at home by themselves. They need, you know, responsible adults. Trained responsible adults who know how to take care of them in a way that is not stupid, right? Like, this is not something that we should fool around with.
I was a disaster at 18.
Could you imagine? Like, that's like, it's like first year university. Like, no.
I had my mother remarried and had two more kids. So I was 11 and 13 years older than my brother and sister. And I would have to babysit. And I'd be 17, 18 years old, taking care of like a 7 and a 5-year-old. And all I could think of while I was doing it was like texting my friends, okay, I'll be free later tonight. Yes. Try to pick. I think my mom will be back from work around 7 or 8. Pick me up. Mm-hmm. If you're going to the LCBO, try to grab me some of this. Like, that's not on my mind.
Yeah.
So, of letting these, you know, barely adults who can buy, you know, 649 tickets, they shouldn't be watching your children.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep reading here. I have one quote from one of her birth rate columns from August 2021. I really wanted to share
this
with
you guys. Please do.
Lay it on us.
It was the point of the column was, just for context, it was that it was beyond just the economical arguments of having more kids and, you know, just protecting the GDP of a nation as people start to die and keeping the population levels at the steady number. The most powerful argument of all is that children are a common social good in and of themselves, and making more is a good thing.
Well, they would, you know, in a lot of ways, having more kids would mean absolutely needing to do a forced conscription of childcare workers in this country with minimal training, of course.
Minimal training and no pay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, these are the 40 volunteer hours you need to get your diploma in high school. That's what that's what this is.
Not to get, you know, too wrapped up in the larger scheme of thing. This entire thing is about our national identity being in crisis. That's what spurred this idea on, which is like, it's like, now we're talking about childcare. It's like, this is such a bad column, and it should be mocked for all eternity.
Right before I get back into it, it's like, remember in high school you wrote the 5-point essays, like your intro, your 3 arguments, then your therefore statement. It's like she wrote it and then it was like, fuck, I need another point.
Don't say birth rate. Don't say birth rate. Don't say
birth rates. military. Okay.
elderly.
Fuck it, let's go. It's just
it's like a sunny bit.
It's so bad.
If we tapped into 18-year-olds across the country, not only could we urgently meet some short-term labor demands, but some may also learn they have a passion for caring and go on to upskill, supplying the country with more trained nurses, doctors, and teachers. Beyond our economic need for caregiving labor, Canada, like so many other developed Western countries, is facing a loneliness epidemic, acute among seniors, and a mental health crisis acute among young people. It's not hard to imagine that more time spent with young people might alleviate some loneliness among the aged, while more in real life time spent with elderly might lessen some of the smartphone
exacerbated.
I saw them perform at the Velvet Underground last week.
Smartphone exacerbated.
I like the early stuff.
Yeah.
Mental health challenges faced by Canadian teens.
This is a really stupid paragraph, like in a very stupid column, but make it easy to become a PSW and then pay PSWs more. Because, I mean, the barrier to entry for that job, like if it can be removed for mandatory conscription, people that are doing mandatory service, it could just be made easier for people to become this thing. And we wouldn't have to do this mandatory conscription thing. I feel like she's manufacturing a problem that doesn't actually exist.
By the way, like we haven't really dug into this. Who decides what?
Yeah.
Is it like a magic hat in Harry Potter?
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
It would be based on astrology, probably. But, like, it is one of those things where, like, none of this will ever get thought through because, one, I think that even Ginny doesn't take this idea seriously. There's no way she's really thought about it. She's not thought of any of the logistics or, you know, what this would do to the country or how traumatized... like the youth would be by doing this kind of stuff. Like working in a long-term care home is not like a walk in the park. You are going to see people die a lot. You're going to see people at their worst. Like this is a tough job. And just like throwing 18-year-olds into it is actually kind of a fucked up thing to do.
My mother she's a palliative care nurse. And just the stories of like, being with people on like the worst day of their lives too, because part of it, like she would work in a facility, but she would also have private clients. So the people she's communicating with are the sons and daughters. And you're talking to these people who are like accepting the fact that like dad's dying or mom's got 3 days maybe left. And like, I just remember like being with her and like her coming home from work and it was as if there was like a veteran living in the house, like just talking about like, how was your day? And she's like, oh, it's fine. How is Betty doing? And she's like, like, good God. All right, make dinner.
I'm hungry now, Mom. Yeah.
Just go live a normal life, Mom. It's like, how does a human being, like, how are they able to do that? Now she went to school to go do that and she's paid a moderate salary for it. Now put that on an 18-year-old
who has to do it,
with no emotional maturity. Like it's a story that like again, this column is insane. Sorry to use the word insane. I know it's insensitive to some. It gets worse. The more you actually read it, it gets more. Again, it's evil.
It's very. I don't know if it's funny the right word that she thinks that these are. Like the softening solutions to the mandatory military service. Like, oh, it doesn't have to be that. It could be child or elder care, as if that stuff is easy.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
It's just jobs. We need warm bodies to fill these positions because nobody wants to work anymore. It's just all nonsense, like conservative ideology, right? Like, these are the jobs. These are the undesirable jobs that we need to force people to do. And then also we can do a national identity because we'll actually send some kids to kill people.
how can you write this if you have kids?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I'm going to get like, just let me go off on this. I used to always get mad. I just to relate it in like the world that I grew up in. Like I used to always hate hockey parents who would scream at kids who were coaching, but they didn't have kids. So it doesn't, like they were volunteering or whatever. Or they're trying to work their way up to coach somewhere else, but they would scream at these 9, 10, 11 year olds and be like, motherfucking let's go. And I would watch these people be like, how can you yell at a child if you don't have a child? You don't know what it's like to do that. So now this person is writing a column who I looked it up has 2 children. Is she sending her kids to the military? Like, it's like a modern day version of Fortunate Son. Like, are you actually comfortable with your children going to fight across the sea, on the other side of the earth to go kill people? Are you okay with your 18-year-old daughter, who's the apple of your eye, actually dealing with people dying every day and dealing with their sons and grandkids who are also having the worst day of your lives? Like, you're comfortable with just putting your kids into that world? Or do you just want it to be a grand scale of the country that to swell up the numbers of the military and make yourself look big on a world stage?
You're touching on the most fucked up part of this is all about feeling good about being from Canada. Like at the end of the day, that's what the point of this column is. It's like, we need to get our numbers up so people don't get mad at us and we have a stronger national identity. So the way that we're doing that is we're just going to fuck up all the teenagers. They're all going to be fucked up by the end of this.
And, you know, like people in positions of power, politicians and the consultant class, they have options to get their kids out of the service.
100%. If this would even come close to being debated in the House of Commons, you just know that there would be paperclip files and additions onto any bill that would get passed, that if you were accepted into a major university or if you had bone spurs or if you had some sort of thing that would just get you out of having to do it. Oh, my God. Or better yet, we're going to assign you to something where you just don't show up.
Yeah, exactly.
Your friend in high school who didn't really do the 40 hours of community service in high school to get his diploma, it's going to be the equivalent of that.
I mean, Ginny would never see this because she doesn't think about class, because she probably brings home a decent salary and she doesn't think about other people, really. The people that would have to go do this are going to be working class kids that don't have another option, right? They weren't planning on going to university because, I mean, university is getting too expensive and the OSAP debt would have been just too much. So like, it's like, okay. So I'll have to do this year of service thing. And then they go to a long-term care facility and see like 30 people die in a year, or they go to the military and they get super fucked up and or they fall into like a weird, like a right-wing reactionary hole that happens, which happens in the military all the fucking time. Like, it's a good recruiting ground for like weirdos. This is something that makes no sense. And I think we're all coming to the end of our patience with it. So I'm going to stop talking soon. But like, Ginny, you should be embarrassed that you wrote this.
You should. It's just like, I'll continue reading it, but like, it's, I seldom attack columnists. That's why I listen to your show, because you can do it for me. But this is one of the instances where I read something and I was just like, God damn, man, like that's that's not human. There are no doubt other areas of Canadian society that could use a year of commitment from our young people. Construction or public infrastructure, firefighting and flood prevention, maybe even tree planting. But what's important is the service, the shared experience, and the national mission.
No, none of those things are important. None of those things.
Yeah, not really. Like,
no.
She even does like, just for the listeners here, in the column she hyperlinks tree planting. And it's a clear shot at the federal government's promise to plant 2 billion trees. Like, it's a little tongue-in-cheek joke to make fun of Trudeau, which, like, shut up. Shut up. It's not funny. Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah, it's like a little, like, pathetic joke in a pathetic joke of a column, right? So it's kind of like doing, like, an Inception thing in its own way.
It's as if any one of us wrote a random essay on a topic and then like in the penultimate graph, we're just like in a very Bill Maher-esque but the conservatives.
This is what Democrats don't understand.
I like this next sentence a lot.
Oh, well, it's an ambitious idea, and there's certainly no shortage of practical reasons it wouldn't work.
Then don't bring it up. don't write this.
Yeah, we brought up all the practical reasons,
but it's like, wouldn't work. This is the thing. Like, it's not an ambitious idea. It's a stupid idea. Like, you need to be able to see the distinction between those two things. There are ambitious ideas that are practical and attainable and doable and actually have positive benefits. This is just some deranged take that you're like, oh, we're going to fix everything with this thing that I want. To say like, hey, there's a lot of practical reasons we shouldn't do it. Great. Let's not talk about it.
Yeah, done.
Don't write that column.
Like, if this column was, if you cut out the military part of it and even like take away a job that's traumatic on the human psyche, like even the part of like, I don't know, working on infrastructure, firefighting, I don't know. If you could come up with some program that's voluntary and you had like, if you didn't create something that was mandatory and just made every kid roll their eyes, you created something that was funded by the government and it's not military, it's not related to that, but it's just some like, I don't know, tree, like it is tree planting.
Yeah.
If you had some publicly funded program for that, that would make kids be like, oh, you know what? I get to go from coast to coast to coast and like see the country and help out a little bit. And that's the national pride. I wouldn't even agree with it, but it'd be better.
Yes.
There would at least be some argument that would be like, you know what? Maybe, you know, plant some trees or volunteer at some like service or something. Not mandatory.
She's not interested in that either. Like, we got to. Yeah.
Of course not. Sorry.
No, but like,
but of course not.
That's, I think, the thing that makes me so mad about this is like, she thinks she's pulling a fast one on us. She thinks she's being real cute. And she's like, oh, I'm going to trick them about the long-term care homes. And then in the meantime, I'm going to get all these kids in the military. Like, it's so stupid. And it's so like, she has so much disdain for her audience, despite the fact that she doesn't have a clear idea in this thing.
I wrote this in a column I wrote from years ago about how a certain type of right-wing gatekeeper has zero respect for the people that vote mm-hmm. for them.
Mm-hmm.
They are ants. They are less than. And this is what this column reeks of.
That's it. It's like, they'll listen because I'm saying this.
They'll eat this up. All right, let's finish this up here. Hey, it would be expensive, parentheses, though we did just spend $16 billion on a car battery plant, end parentheses, logistically complicated, and it might exacerbate our private sector labor shortages.
So, like, we shouldn't do it. But, like,
good,
like a $16 billion car battery plant is bad. Don't, like, that doesn't make another expensive thing good. Like, these are bad, childish arguments. Please continue.
It's a real two rights make a right. Yeah. Or two wrongs make a right. Yeah. Or two right-wingers write a shitty column. But it could be worth it, particularly if the program is designed to maximize social cohesion, sending urban kids to rural environments.
Vice versa. What do you mean urban kids? What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Expand on that.
That's...
We're just having a conversation here. What does urban kids mean?
Yeah. Yeah, what does it mean to you specifically? Describe one. Describe an urban kid.
Just go.
Details.
What does that mean?
Where are you going to send them?
Conservatives balked when Prime Minister Trudeau said he thought Canada had no core identity. But do we? Not only do Canadians today seem to lack knowledge of and respect for our shared history, we seem to lack a sense of anything shared at
all.
You
know why? Because the new woke passport. That's why. this is just the woke passport shit. You know, like our shared history. Like, fuck off.
Maybe we don't have a sense of anything shared because we stole this land from the people who were occupying it.
Maybe this country is not real. Maybe that's like a thing that people need to get their points across and, you know, achieve their goals. Maybe we should, you know, worry about the individuals in this country and whether or not they have enough to live.
And final, this Canada Day, it's worth considering
Wouldn't we be stronger as a country if we had a plan to work on that?
What a dumb way to end. Like, that was legitimately terrible. And we spent a lot of time at the start of this podcast worrying about the future of journalism. The Hub existing does not make me feel better, because I don't know if you noticed, scrolling through some of the popular posts, the bottom one is Guilt is a Poor Guide to Action. David Frum on residential schools and understanding the past and present. And I don't know if you've noticed, David Frum has gone like heavy into the residential school denial stuff lately. He was retweeting stuff from the Dorchester Review, which is just like a genocide denying rag, right? And so, like, these are the things that the Hub is pushing: mandatory military service, stuff about our shared history, trying to reforge a national Canadian identity. Like, this stuff sucks. Nobody needs it. It's ahistorical, and it's also, like, it's counterproductive.
I wanted to make this point before the episode ended. Like, going into the episode, I was researching the article, and I was looking at some of Jenny's old stuff, and this ties with From a bit, because I think once, you know, this can delve into another conversation, but, like, once we had the emergence of Donald Trump and this sort of right-wing populism, we started to forge a, I don't want to say a nurturing relationship, but a more, like, accepting dynamic of old-school republicanism and old-school conservatism, where we would hug W, and Cheney's daughter became palatable, and Mitt Romney became what republicanism used to be. And From was part of that Never Trump group of, like, this guy is crazy. It's like, don't forget about all the things I did. This guy's crazy. And I bring that up because it reminded me of, while I was researching this, looking at, like, reading Ginny's older columns when she was a contributor to the National Post, when she would, she still does to this day, like, appearing on The Agenda with Steve Paikin and coming on panels with CTV. There was a bit of, like, there was elements of, like, when you'd hear talk of, like, progressive conservatism, of, like, you know, the, like we were saying earlier, socially liberal, fiscally conservative, blah, blah. But it just, like, noticing this, like, between 2021 and 2023, there was a hard shift to making fun of wokeism. It used to be where she would challenge members of the party who were, you know, anti-LGBTQ, or she would say, hey, Erin O'Toole's doing a lot of things to unite the party. Let's not get lost in the, you know, abortion debate or marching in pride parades. You know, like, let's try to unite the party and be kind of a center right option. And all of a sudden now it's become, this is woke and Trudeau is awful. And now there's, like, you can tell from this column, there's, like, a war hawk element that's really pushing, like, I just find it unique when you focus on one particular political commentator watching their own evolution from being something like a palatable center-right option. And don't you remember, like, healthy debate? And now it's like these liberals are trying to change the way we live our lives, and we have to have more kids because these people love killing babies and they love not having babies.
This is, like, something that isn't so uncommon, especially, like, in the time frame. I feel like COVID broke a lot of people's brains, and I think a lot of people did not come back from that. But conservatism is an incredibly interesting ideology, because they use whatever they think will work, and they'll say what they can get away with in order to be popular, right? And this shit flies with specific crowds. This mandatory military service will not. This is, like, it's so bad. So this is now part of the show that we do a thing that I like to call plugs and recs. We talk about things that we've read in the last little bit that didn't suck. So nothing from the Hub. It doesn't have to be something that we read. It could be something that we wrote. It's something that we did. It could be anything of the above. It could be a video game. So I'm going to pass over to Marino first. Tell us about something that isn't shitty, like this column that we read.
Did you mention a video game, Eric? Oh, I'm allowed for sure to talk about those. Well, I've been playing a lot of The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, and whew, I could talk a lot about it. I won't get too deep here, but I'll just say this. I think it's the new number one for me. It changes the way I think about video games and how I assess them and what fun is in a game. It improved on Breath of the Wild, and that was already, well, a bit flawed in my opinion, a fantastic 10 out of 10 game. So this is, it's shown me that Zelda games don't need to be like From Software games. They can be their own thing. And like the whole building mechanic and stuff, like it just lends to the puzzle solving elements of Zelda perfectly. The movement options they added, wonderful. The story and the vibe, but like one of the best sequels I've ever played, just taking that established world and like terraforming it and making it like similar but fresh. I did recently read, I believe Tom Cardoso and Robin Doolittle's Secret Canada piece on the broken FOI system in the Globe and Mail. That's a really excellent piece that just shows how this like public service that is supposed to be an inalienable right in Canada is just kind of broken. There's basically government employees are looking at more reasons to not give you the information than to give you it. And yeah, go check that out. So those are my recommendations. All right.
Well, Hunter, I'm going to pass it over to you then.
I was just going to say, my girlfriend's been playing Zelda nonstop for the last little bit. And actually, as we're doing this episode right now, I'm watching her. Are you winning, hon? She says, you never really win Zelda. You just kind of keep going. You just keep going. And I'm happy for her. She's playing it on the big screen. She's loving it right now. And it's the graphics look spectacular. You know, I'll just be like, I've been either working away or I'm reading something, and then I just look up and it's like, oh, look at that. Isn't that wild?
They really know how to make a 5-year-old system look good.
They did. It looks spectacular. Not a video game person much. I'm trying to think things that I've been. I just read Jody Wilson Raybould's book about Indian in the Cabinet. It's excellent writer. It's very, I'm sure, like when you read political memoirs, you can kind of tell when it's ghostwritten or when you can tell like it's been dictated and then written for her. But I don't know. It's just really detailed. It's a little extra partisan. It's a little extra my side of the story, but it's, you know, at the same time, it wasn't bad at all. Oh, Not My Party, The Rise and Fall of Canadian Tories. So I think, which is somewhat relevant to today's show. And as for shows, we've been hate watching The Idol on HBO. It is, oh. I'm just going to say this, pure trash, like bad, but just bad enough that I'm like, oh, it's Sunday night. Like, oh, that's why.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's not good.
Do you think that is by design, or is it just truly just a bad attempt at making a bad show that somehow still does it?
I was talking to her about it. It's like Entourage was aware of how corny it was, or like it knew it was kind of cheesy, but like you could enjoy it a bit. This is bad. Like it's like they think that it's like this is Emmy award-winning shit. HBO Sunday night at 9, and it's bad. Damn. So to counter that, we've also been watching an old HBO show, 6 Feet Under. Show. It was on at the same time as The Sopranos and Wire. Yep, it's phenomenal. I've seen it a few times. It's her first time, and it's
interesting.
It's really good, and it makes you
add that one to the list.
It's worthy on the list, and whatever your list is, put it to the top. It's
best finale of all time, actually.
Oh my goodness! I bite my lip every time watching it. It is truly heartbreaking. What about you?
What about me? Okay, so I'd say first, there's a great piece in The Breach by Emma Paling. I'm going to say friend of the show. She wrote an article about something that is very, like, I would say, like, inside baseball Toronto Twitter, but it's actually a really fun read. The article is called Toronto Strangers Turned a Twitter Chat into a Mayoral Election Force. And so early on in the election campaign, there were Twitter accounts that popped up doing things called, like, Brad Bradford Facts, talking about his record on council, or like Bylaw Broke It and talking about Anna Bylaw's penchant for promising things despite voting for the exact opposite in her tenure as deputy mayor. And then these accounts got like contacted by the city saying that they needed to get in contact with them to discuss, you know, possible violations of election rules. There was a total shitstorm on Twitter, and this kind of goes into it from a more personal perspective. You get to see some things about the people behind these accounts, and it's a good grassroots political story. I really enjoyed reading it, and I would say part of that is the fact that I know these people on Twitter, so it was like a fun little story involving people that I feel like I know, kind of, because we follow each other on the Stupid app. So check it out. I think that's really good. The other recommendation I would make is support local media. Oh my God. Like subscribe to something Please. Good. You know, I like the Hoser. Subscribe to the Hoser. Help out your local podcasts, your local podcasters. Some of us are quitting their normal jobs and going into this full time. So we are, I should say this, that we have not been recording enough. That's going to change. I'm going to have a lot more time to do these. And because of that, Marino will be there as well. We'll do this every day, Marino. We'll record 3-hour episodes every day.
That will be helpful. Yes, I definitely don't have a job either.
You can do that. So I can do it's that called every day. Time theft. Everyone does it. Everyone comes on my podcast and skips work. It's so much fun. And Hunter, everyone's doing it. Hunter, you need to do this as well. Don't go to work. Get on the podcast 3 hours every day. This was an absolute blast. We should make the next time we talk, not 8 years from now. Come back anytime you have a column that you want to cover. It's always nice talking to people who are doing the work in the field. It's also great, you know, talking to someone that we always enjoyed talking to.
No, I appreciate that. And guys, let me just say, I've been listening to the show for a while and I read all the Jeremy stuff. And I just got to say, like, this is as much fun as I've had coming on a show, doing a show. It's been a while since I've appeared on someone's podcast, and I wasn't just yelling about the Leafs power play. So tonight it was just refreshing to chat. And yeah, anytime, I would love to be on the show. If you guys see a column that you think would really piss me off, by all means, forward it my way and I'll generate an opinion on it. But hey, you guys, you're doing phenomenal work, and congratulations to Eric.
Well, thank you so much. And we should grab a beer soon, eh?
We'll grab two. Anytime.
There we go. All right, bye.
See you guys.
It's Big Shiny Takes, the only antifreeze beach podcast. Big Shiny Takes, reading garbage for your brain. It's Big Shiny Takes with Jeremy, Eric, and Marino. Big Shiny Takes are sure to entertain. Are sure to entertain.